Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Welcome back to part two with the Dean and EJ, the Books Boy. Now, what else have I read? So, I read, PJ, I've recommended before on the show, Biblioteca de los Muertos.
Yeah,
The Library of the Dead by Glenn Cooper.
Now, to make clear, like, hold on, because I've been confused now. It is not a Spanish book, because you make it sound like a Spanish book.
So I feel bad for saying to you about books not being available in English. This is an English book.
But it's an English book,
it's very difficult to find in English.
What?
So it's by Glenn Cooper.
Great being in Spain.
Okay. I don't know why, but I always, well, initially I read the first book about a year ago in Spain. It was lent to me by Valerie the Pigeon Detective, and I read it and I loved it. And I recommended it on the show. And then I kind of forgot about it for a while, but I always had it in the back of my mind to look out for the sequel. I've never seen it in bookshops here in English.
Wow, okay.
But I looked in Spain. I didn't find it last time, but this time I did. And they've got a lot of his books, all in Spanish. So
wow, okay.
Cool. And I spoke actually to my Spanish teacher, and she said the same thing. She was going to, I recommend it to her, and she couldn't find it in English, and she's got to get it in Spanish. And I don't know why.
Okay, that's strange. Okay, so this...
Yeah, it's just a curious thing. I don't have the copy to show you, because I've given it to...
And I do need to know it now, because... What's it called in English, then? It's just called The Labyrinth of the Dead?
And so the first one, Biblioteca de los Muertos, is obviously The Library of the Dead.
Well, it's very funny to say, obviously, as you kind of assume everyone speaks Spanish. Like the Library of the Dead. Okay.
I think we know what a biblioteca is now. Anyway, maybe not. We were accused of somewhere. I can't remember where, of being possibly classist. So I don't want to.
Well, I'm not much better, because I sometimes recommend books that haven't even been published in English. So yeah. Look, I can't even find the Library of the Dead. I get here like a novel by T.L. Hutu,
you see,
from Zimbabwe. So I don't know. No, so it's very hard to find this book.
The sequel that I've read is The Book of Souls, El Libro de las Almas. And I've just purchased the third one. So maybe next month you'll hear about that. I'm maybe going to start it like tonight, tomorrow.
Again, anyway. If I look up The Book of Souls, I just find Iron Maiden.
Iron Maiden album from 2013 or so. Yeah.
Okay, very hard to find these books. But anyway.
But you can find them in Spain. So guys, first learn Spanish.
I can't find this chap. I'm like, are you sure this exists? Because I just find now James Oswald, The Book of Souls. It's very hard to find. Make sure to write the guy's name. I bet he's some Spanish guy with an English.
He's from like New York or something. I don't know what's going on.
Okay. Well, look, Glenn, what's his name? Not Glenn Cooper. Glenn Cooper. Mr. Glenn Cooper, if you hear this interview, please let us know why he's so popular in Latino America, Spain. And we'd love to know. Well, what's the connection there? So give us a shout.
And why you're so unpopular in English. But these are amazing books. Now, I will give the caveat that the second book's not quite as good as the first one, but it's still pretty good. So, you know, most sequels are never quite as good as the original. And this is a sequel, you know, so it's Will Piper, the New York detective, FBI. Guy retired now. He's retired now after the first novel.
Okay.
And if you remember, I need to give a little bit of backstory. So what this is in the first one, we see a lot of scenes in the present trying to catch a killer, and a lot of scenes linked to the past. And there's a bit with Churchill. There's a bit set in the 1300s and the 700s and all these different time periods. And in Vectis on the Isle of Wight near England, we actually have these... like a kind of monastery or you know, type place. And one of the chaps there, he's the seventh son of a seventh son. And he starts writing, and he just writes lists of names and the date they're going to be born or the date they're going to die. And he writes and writes and writes. And, you know, if he writes your name in the book, you're going to die. And it's not Death Note. He's not causing it. He's just predicting, you know.
He's just predicting it. Okay.
It's almost like God's speaking through him and he's just writing what's going to happen. And he writes and he starts to cover the whole world. Like, he could not possibly know, you know, any of these people. He's writing in multiple languages. And then he essentially rapes a girl there and has a son. And the son just immediately starts writing. And they're writing together. Like, they're writing in tandem, like the lists join up when you kind of put them together. Like, they're not covering the same material or anything. It's done perfectly. And then they expand and expand. And this, they keep them in this kind of underground crypt, just writing essentially. And they have all these books. So by the time of this sequel, you know, that's all over with. But there was loads of these scribes, loads of them. And they just essentially, the sad bit is they kept basically giving them local girls to violate and that to reproduce, because they thought they were doing kind of God's work in a sense to create these books.
Right, so it's going very dark. You know, okay.
But these books cover from the 700s right up until the year 2027. So these guys wrote a massive amount of births and deaths right to the future. And then at the same time, all the books stop on, I think it's the 9th of February, 2027. And they all just write, you know, end of the world. And all the scribes commit suicide.
Wow, that's crazy. Well, it's a fascinating concept, very dark, but...
So, and this novel is set a few, you know, more or less now, a year or two ago, whenever it was written, so it's, end of the world's coming up, but it's not, you know, it's not tomorrow or anything like that, no one's massively worried. And no one really knows about this, because even though it was found in kind of British territory, or as it were, the FBI and CIA, you know, the Angskin took it all away, basically, and they said that this is our secret, and it's in Area 51, and no one's getting it, okay? So... this chap, Will Piper, was involved, but he's retired. He wants out. But someone somewhere finds, in an antique dealer, one of the books. And then it says, well, one of them had always gone missing. Now, no one is sitting reading these books anymore. The FBI have got it all digitized. You know, you can just search the dates and you'll find out who's going to be born and who's going to die.
Yeah.
But there was always a gap where there was a year that was missing, and now they find this book.
Right, okay.
And they pay, this guy Harry Spence pays thousands and thousands for it. No one can figure out why he's paying so much for the book, but he knows he's in the 2027 club, and he kind of gets Will to help him, and Will's not massively keen, and his wife Nancy isn't very keen, but eventually they go along and help and put the family at risk, actually, because the FBI want to stop this, and they will send people to, you know, kill you and burn your house down, essentially, to get this book back.
Okay.
So it gets very dark and very violent in parts, I have to say. But this book has two flaws. Number one, not enough scenes set in the past compared to the first book. And number two, not the most feminist book, because we don't see a lot of Nancy. I like Nancy in the first book. In this book, she's just his wife. You know, so they get together in the first book, but now she doesn't do a lot, you know.
I get it.
So she was stronger before. But apart from that, it's a great book. And PJ, there's a few scenes that are set in the past in the second half of the book, and we meet some interesting characters. We meet a certain Guillermo Shakespeare.
Guillermo Shakespeare.
That's right. Our good friend William Shakespeare appears in the novel. And there's also...
And is he actually translated as Guillermo, yeah?
No, he's... Okay, no. Okay, but there is... a certain Juan Calvino, Calvin of Calvinism, Protestantism, and all that. Yeah. And there's also a little doctor chap who predicts the future.
Mr. Dr. Faustus?
No, but Nostradamus.
Nostradamus himself, of course.
So these guys appear in these flashback scenes, and there's clues relating to each one in this big old family house of the people who owned the book and gave it to auction. And it's been in their family for centuries because an old baron took it. And there's a sad scene where he takes it from this poor guy who was looking after it for the monastery. And they basically said, take this and, you know, hide it. Because they burn all the rest. They tried to lock them in, but this one guy kept one, you know. And what happens is basically this baron comes in and says, you owe me some money. You can't, you know, you'll be a product. I've paid for shoes or something like that. You can't pay it because your husband's sick in bed dying. But the Baron doesn't care. So he says, you know, if you can't get out of your deathbed and make my shoes, you're going to have to give me my money back. Or you can't, you spent your money on food for your family, then I'm going to take something of yours. What do you have that's valuable? And he starts plundering around the house and they say, take my work tools. And they're the only thing valuable I have. And he says, well, your work tools are garbage to me. But he finds the book and he says, well, I'm taking this book, you know.
Oh, no.
So his family have now had the book for hundreds of years.
Right, okay. So it's like the history of how the book came to the hands of others.
There's a little bit of that. Yeah. I like the concept. All around this big mansion they live in are hidden in candlestick holders and hidden in, you know, behind bits of walls are clues and letters from, you know, Calvin to his friends and things like that. And a new sonnet of Shakespeare, like undiscovered.
A new sonnet.
Or a poem or something anyway, like some new, you know, new work of Shakespeare, like totally undiscovered. Turned out to be his earliest one or something like that, you know? So a lot of really cool stuff is happening, you know? But meanwhile, Will is just kind of like, his motivation is, we've got to get this book, give it to Harry Spence, because he's dying and he wants to know, are my family going to be okay? Are they going to survive until at least 2027? So that's his motivation. And Will's motivation is, I just want to get out of this and stop, like, the FBI chasing me and people trying to kill me and, you know, all this kind of stuff. These are some of the best books I've ever read. Like, they're amazing. And the way they go through time and bring in all the fun characters and everything.
Yeah, I like that when one mixes historical figures,
And they pop up, you don't expect them, you know?
Nice.
But what's really cool is the FBI can use this knowledge then. They send someone into a fight and knowing that, you know, he's going to die, and I know he's going to die because I've got it in the book.
Mm.
And they already know. They, you know, so when they're chasing someone down, they already know how things are going to turn out because they know people's death dates.
Well, that has been done before by the Minority Report, the Philip K. Dick short story.
Yeah, I mean, that particular...
I'm not trying to criticize, actually. I love the concept. I don't mind it being used before, but I did like it when I... anyway, I always say I like Philip K. Dick because he's a great author. And he comes up with these strange ideas. So I like the sound of this novel because that does sound a bit like kind of clever sci-fi. I like it. Cool.
Yeah. And again, like I would say to everyone to read the first one. And then if you love it, try the second one. It's almost as good. But everything's all building up to a big disaster that's about to happen in the original home of Valerie the Pigeon Detective in Caracas, in Venezuela.
And then the next book and the keepers of the library, right?
The next book should be the El Fin de las Escribas, the end of the...
Okay. Well, the English translation, they just say no, and the rest of the Anglophonic world is called The Keepers of the Library.
This is confusing. You know, this is Dumas style. All the books being released with different names and different volumes. Now you can't find
it. And there seems to be a tale only in ebook between
the
two.
Yeah, there's like a little short tale. I don't know if I'll read that or not. Assuming it's been like one chapter or something. Maybe I'll read it today.
Of course.
If I can find it, you know.
It sounds good. The only information I just quickly saw there was that he's popular in Italy. So I guess this is a very strange job. He's very popular in Italy and Spain, supposedly. But all right, fair enough. I mean,
there's also some sad, you know, Dickensian scenes when they're in school, Calvin and his friends, and, you know, they say to this chap who doesn't, he's sent to school in French, Edgar, and he can't even speak French properly. And when he doesn't, you know, conjugate his Latin verbs, the teacher just takes the kid and beats him until he's bleeding, you know, all this kind of
that's
stuff, you know, so it's a little bit of that, but
interesting they took Calvin. It's a strange
it was an unusual choice.
But I mean, I just find Calvinism as well, it's quite, can be there, because they talk a lot about eternal damnation, so I'm wondering, does that lead up to the third part, you know?
So the idea here is that we see the formation of these characters, we see how Calvin gets his idea of predestination because of the book, and we see how Shakespeare develops his writing, and we see how Nostradamus develops his prophesizing, and a lot of it's related to this book.
I like it. Yeah.
But these people have only ever seen the one book. There's thousands in this underground sealed up vault that tell the whole history of the whole world. But, you know, only one ever made it out into civilization.
Wow. No, I do like the concept. And one wants to know what happens, of course.
Yeah.
And you make a sound from the book. Cool. Awesome.
Absolutely fantastic. So I really, really love those ones. So
and again, Souls, everyone,
or listen to the Iron Maiden album, but it's not one of the better albums.
I don't think you should change the name. I think I like the way that you kind of stuck with a Spanish name up until now. Just keep it. So what's it called in Spanish? El Libro de los Muertos.
So the Biblioteca de los Muertos and El Libro de las Almas.
So the ultimate recommendation is, Dean, is get those books, but in Spanish, please.
If you can get them in Spanish, that would be preferable. PJ, it's just time to mention this month's sponsor. We are sponsored by the AnnaKarenina.
Ah, indeed.
And
That's
this is
very
going to link to our
important.
next book in a moment. But guys, if you're writing a book and you think, goodness me, this is only 100 pages, and I wasn't planning on writing a novella, I really wanted a longer work, go to the AnnaKarenina.gov and order one of their packages. You've got agricultural manuals, the one that Orwell chose in Coming Up for Air, the fishing manual,
Some religious
philosophical and
manuals.
religious text that you get in Shirley by one of Charlotte Bronte, the
You
type
just
of
kind
religion you get in some
of
of
just, but
the
make sure to
devils.
put the make sure to put the novella kind of in the middle. Don't make it too obvious. Kind of in the middle, or
Exactly. The Dostoevsky, the Brothers Karamazov, religious discussions, it's all there. All these different methods. You choose the package that's right for
Oh
you,
yeah,
and
there's
it's the
art to it.
Anna Karenina method, so they'll give it to you pre-made, and you just slot in the little bits of your novel around it. And all of a sudden they got an 800 page notebook,
And the critics will love it because it's simply long. No other reason. It's just straight
Yeah,
long.
right. The critics
Yeah.
they can't read 900 pages. They just say, oh,
They're
brilliant,
just kind of amazing. I didn't do this.
So that's that links into the next book that I read, though, which we'll get to in a moment.
The sequel to Anna Karenina
No,
and the manual
it's
of pig
very,
farming.
very long. Leo, so I realized that I'd read a lot of modern books and a lot of crime books and a lot of really fun things, but I hadn't read anything from the 1800s, and I had a little
Oh,
panic.
that's shocking.
So I
Shocking.
read something from the 1800s. It took me 2 full weeks, so long. Leopoldo Alas, Clarine, nicknamed Clarine, La Regenta. Universal classic.
Now,
Nine
considered one of the
hundred,
quintess.
yeah,
Yeah.
900 pages.
Considered one of the quintessential Spanish novels, Clarín is in the realist school. So, realism started later in Spain than in France or in England. And today, together with Benito Pérez Galdós, who we've covered, or you have covered, team, he is considered one of the two main realist
Yeah.
novelists, but only for that novel in his case.
By the way, at the end of the 900 pages, there's a 10-page short story. So if you read 900 pages and you think, goodness, it's just not enough. 900, like, I need more. But then just that extra 10, that's just the sweet spot,
That's a sweet one. They didn't think it was long enough, yeah. And
Exactly.
to be honest, but all of his other stuff is really short, right? That's what I know
I've got a
about
book
him.
of short stories of his there. Everything else he wrote is like 100 pages or shorter, or like maybe one of them hits like 200,
Now,
like a
I did
maximum.
warn you. I did warn you, Dina. It's not the most popular. It's not the most people do tend to like Galdós more. Like it's
Everyone I
being more
spoke to in
entertaining.
Spain said, why on earth are you reading that? It's so boring.
And were they right?
Yes.
Oh no.
So it's very boring. And the strangest thing is, it's 900 pages and I've got so little to say about it.
Oh no.
I've never, I mean, I felt bad that I was struggling with the Spanish last time with the Vargas Llosa. So that's why I read the Glenn Cooper book, and that was grand. No issues there with the language. So then I thought, okay, let's really give myself a challenge. Clarín, La Regenta. The
Oh
language isn't
boy.
the problem.
Oh, really?
It's just the fact that it's so boring.
Yeah, yeah,
Nothing
yeah.
happens, and for pages and pages, it really uses the Anna Karenina method, just dragging it out, talking about nothing, just sections talking about religion and things like that really comes in a big way. And the poor girl Anna's sitting around reading, Confessions of Saint Augustine for her hobby, just really
Oh,
boring stuff,
come on. Oh, Lord. Okay. Was
So,
there anything nice about it? What was positive about it?
no, nothing really. It's so I'll
Oh,
tell you
come on.
really, we've got this girl Anna sorry, she is La Regenta, okay? She
Yeah,
marries like
okay.
an old magistrate or I guess regent, if you will, but they're in Vetusta, so this kind of ancient old antiquated town, right? The word means antiquated. And some of the characters of Dickens, some of the side characters of Dickensian type names like Visitation and Olvidito, like forgotten and this kind of stuff. So sometimes it's almost a Dickensian kind of naming convention with the side characters, where the name hints at something about the character's personality, which I like. That was the only good part.
Okay.
But nothing happens. I mean, she's got her husband, okay, Victor. And she also has two other people who like her, Don Fermin, who is her confessor. So basically, it's her priest and this guy Mesía. But this is
Okay.
unheard of in this sleepy old town where nothing ever happens. They couldn't believe, there might be a love triangle, and then, whether or not she cheats later, I'm not going to reveal. But like, even just the idea of it was shocking to this town of like upright citizens where nothing has ever happened.
In very conservative Spain,
Yeah, they could not believe it. And there's even a part where she wants to go out, and he says, like, what? What abominations! Dances, theater, novels—like, oh, you know, goodness me! Like, you know,
Novels.
what kind of world are we living in where people are, you know, engaging in diversions and amusements? You know, it's
Oh,
unheard
God.
of. So it's that's quite funny. My favorite part of the whole book is a quote near the end where they say, "It would be more noble to take a dagger to my veins than to wound me with the poisonous letters of a perfumed envelope."
I think you liked it because it does sound one of your like one of your songs.
Yeah, right. I gotta say, I should have written that myself, but you beat me to it by a few, you know, 200
A few
years,
years, a
Clarine, you
few hundred years.
know.
Oh, so essentially, he wrote one of your songs and then built the Anna Karenina methods.
Yeah.
He, but he's okay.
And there's a lot of, you know, just people judging each other and saying, like, all these women who don't know how to, you know, do anything other than wash babies, you know, the women in this town, and just a lot of like gossiping and people hating each other for no real reason, and small town stuff happening, you know. But there's really very little plot. You know, these two men like her, and then you wonder, well, is she having an affair with one of them or isn't she? But it's a lot of her sitting around, and her husband being suspicious of her, and just they're talking, and you know, nothing really happens for the majority of it. It's just lots of religious bit. She's contemplating religion, and you know, she's reading, as I say, confession
Yeah, I
books, and
said,
you know,
listen.
yeah. I
All right.
don't know
Doesn't
what else to
sound, you're not
say about
selling.
it, you
You're not
know.
selling at the end, I'm afraid. You're not
No.
making me want to read it.
And the problem is, it's 900 pages. You know, that's the problem.
Okay, if we're only a short story, right? Anna
And
Karenina,
not,
or a
yeah,
song. It's just a
now and
song.
again, you think something's starting to happen, and for a couple of pages, it gets interesting. And I think, oh, wow, okay, something's happening here. And then it's just, you know, now let's talk about religion for 30 pages. And it's like, you almost had me there. And I can't even remember any more details than that because it was a slog to get through. It almost ruined my holidays, you know?
Oh Lord, okay. Well, I'm surprised. How can you come how can you fill up with 900 pages with that,
And I
Dino?
swear everyone was like, that's so boring. Why are you reading that? Like, it's a classic. I thought I need to read the classics, you know?
Oh no.
But it has next to no plot. Like, it's just the love story. And some of the side characters are slightly humorous, of course, but there's an awful lot of just, well, will she date someone? I should say they hold her in admiration the whole time. Like, oh my, it's Lara Henta. Like, we're so privileged to see her. She's beautiful and she's godly. And they refer to her as being almost a goddess and a princess. And even her husband does. And everyone worships this woman. She's just like queen of the town, you know. She's just amazing. She's on the biggest pedestal possible, you know. But the only real thing to take away from this book is the dagger in the perfumed envelope, that I paraphrased there.
Or just one single line.
Yeah, but you know the writing style, like his writing is fine. It's just too long. So I'm gonna try maybe next month and the month after some of his shorter works, some of his short stories,
Okay, give
and
me
you know.
a second chance. I don't think many people give him a second chance, Clarine. It's very
Well,
nice of you. But anyway, it's a
because it's so
very
drastically
interesting.
different. So go ahead.
It is a very interesting movement, realism in Spanish. Is you chose maybe the most kind of tedious one out of
Yeah,
all.
well, it's just so. The shorter books are so the length is drastically different from 900 pages to 60 that I think, you know, it might be worth reading just to give them a second chance, you know.
Okay. Well,
But
that's very nice of you.
yeah,
Very
well, there we
generous.
go. We should mention, of course, that we're joined as always by Little Alfred. We've got the whole Books Boys gang,
Got the
and
gang here.
we've got our TNC network that support us, and we're played on Radio Oxen. So hello to everyone in Oxfordshire, and check us out on social media and all the rest of it. PJ, should we quickly do our recommendations?
Indeed. So what I recommend is Geese or The Wild Geese by Mori Ogai. It's a classic Japanese novel. What does it say about it? It's basically a love story, a taboo love story, which was popular around the time in Japan. And the whole goose scene is very relevant. It's about, I suppose, it's a metaphor for sensuality, for richness. So this boy is in love with a girl who's kind of hidden away as a kind of a concubine, and he just in love with her, but he can never reach her. It's a very short novel, very sweet short novel, very well written. Give it a try. Mori Ogai, classic novel. Am I getting it wrong? Maybe from the 19-teens or 1920s.
Okay.
Great stuff.
So about 100 years ago. Okay, cool.
Nice. What about yourself?
Well, I thought, you know what? I didn't read anything today. I took a day off. Like Lara Henta broke me, and I took a day off reading. And I'm
Indeed,
going to
I
start
can
something
imagine.
new tomorrow. But I have here my recommendation. I thought I'd just do something different. Sometimes you review children's literature, and I never really do.
Oh,
So I've gone for the ultimate children's literature for the little kids, the Dick and
yeah.
Dora books. These are the books that I
Oh,
read
yeah.
when I was like 3, 4 years old. So technically, the first books I ever read.
Oh, wow. Okay. It's
Dick and
interesting then,
Dora
actually.
and their pets, Nip and Fluff. And they're just like little, just a series of tiny little picture books for kids with a few lines of, story. But we get this
Nice.
kind of, it's set in the 50s. I do like little 50s, happy little, kids in middle class suburban kind of England, But
Yeah.
we get these kinds of, I'll read a section of dialogue. Because
Beautiful.
this is what kids are doing on a daily basis.
Of course, yeah. I
We
can
will
imagine what
play,
happens.
yeah, we will play, said Dick and Dora, presumably in unison. Dick runs and Dora hops. Dora hops on a line. So she's drawn a line on the ground. This is my
Okay.
line, said Dora. See, Dick, I am on my line. I can hop on my line, said Dora. It is fun to get on a line and hop. If my children talked like this, I would get an exorcist. Like, I don't know what.
Oh, no, it's
This is
okay.
just this normal, everyday children's dialogue. It is fun to get on a line and hop.
It is very naturally. I mean, this is what the kids are up to nowadays, right?
Yeah,
That's how
right.
they talk.
So that's my
Oh,
recommendation. And by the way, PJ, just before we wrap up the episode, one thing I wanted to mention was the series of books I was talking about, The Library of the Dead. They're making a TV show soon. So for anyone who
all right.
can't find the books, there's going to be a show. So just keep a lookout for that, and you'll be able to get. Oh, hold on.
Oh, who's this? Not a
I think
call.
it's very unusual to get two phone calls in one episode, but let's
What's going on here?
see. Hello, you're through to Books Boys. You got Dean and PJ. Who's calling?
Hi, is this Playboys or oh,
What? Oh my
Books
God, it's
Boys?
Playboy Alex. Oh
What?
no, I'm calling into the wrong thing. You're in the
Oh,
wrong show. Yeah, but don't worry. We can take you. How have you been?
I guess I have something. I got a couple books that I might have read, maybe. That's a crazy
Okay.
coincidence, though. That's a
Well,
crazy coincidence.
the timing is perfect. You caught us just before the end of the show, so you've timed it perfectly.
Oh, wonderful.
We can reschedule Playboys, but while you're here, why don't we hear what you've been reading?
Yeah.
All right. Well, I have recently read 1984 and also Three
Ooh, nice.
Musketeers.
Wow, so
Nice.
you took recommendations from us, essentially, is what I'm hearing.
Well, it sounds like it was mostly you, Dean.
What?
I am still
Whoa,
working on
excuse me.
Narcissus and Goldman,
I recommend
PJ.
it. I recommended 1940 when we were living in Japan together, young Alex.
Oh, that's right.
Did
Actually, the version I read was the
GT,
book you
wow.
gave me when
And
you
not just
left.
that, I gave Alex
Oh, okay. Well,
That's right.
I don't see the evidence for this. This is hearsay to me,
No,
I gave
he
Alex my
actually
own
did give
copy of
me
1984.
he gave me the copy, yeah, and that's the copy I read.
Okay, well, if you yeah, that's the copy you read. We've given him one recommendation each then, PJ.
Nice.
So what happens is he tells us which was best, and the other person's off the show. No.
Oh, okay, so it's a countdown.
Ooh,
Oh,
that's actually
dark.
really hard. I'm not sure which one I could say is better.
Oh
Oh,
wow,
really?
you saved us there. You saved us. That's the real token
Very
of friendship.
diplomatic.
Neither of us has to
Alex is
quit.
a he's a very diplomatic playboy.
But yeah, PJ, I don't think we can kick Dean off his own show.
I don't think we can, no. I don't think so.
Does anyone else know how to record and edit?
Yes.
Well, you got a fair point. All right.
Well,
So
Alex,
what do
why don't you tell us about 1984 first, since that's the one that caused the controversy there?
Sure. So 1984 is, it was actually my first time reading it. I'd read Animal Farm in high school, but not exactly the same thing. It's very interesting because the book is broken up into three parts. I don't know if we want to get into the third part too much, but the first part is kind of setting up the world. You got your main character, Winston, who he disagrees with the government he's in. It seems like authoritarian communist type of government where you have Big Brother looking over things. And there's like 2 minutes of hate where everyone will just yell at this one guy, Goldstein, and just trying, like, it's just propaganda, just people being just brainwashed completely. And Winston just doesn't buy it. He wants it just gone.
Yeah, interesting though, the 2 minutes totally. Of hate, we still have that. Like, you can go nowadays to like these, you know, junkyards where you smash up cars to get out your aggression and things like that. Like, well, it's the same principle.
Well, it's more of a propaganda thing
that exists. Well, a lot of the themes of 1984 exist. Big Brother, you know, or shall we say Little Brothers exist now. Yeah, so anyway, yeah.
Sure, sure. And you have all the ministries. You got the Ministry of Love, which is in charge of war. And I mean, that's just spot on. Ministry of Truth is the one that the book focuses the most on. And that's the one that basically, well, they take the truth and then turn it into whatever propaganda they want to release to the public.
And so these misnomers are something that we see today as well. Like, I had two examples in my head yesterday, just by coincidence. I can really remember one of them now. So, for example, you want to cancel a service. You don't speak to cancellations; you speak to retentions. You know, to keep you. And this happens. I can't remember what the second one was I was thinking of, but this permeates our culture now. These misnomers, designed to kind of. Oh, that's the other one. We used to get a sick note from our doctor. Now it's called a fit note to say that you're fit to work, but. It's the opposite of what there's a lot of this misnomer designed to kind of play a mental trick on you and change the way you see things.
Yeah, that is a fair point. That's a fair point. I mean, it happens all the time. Like, I see it in news, just twisting the story to whatever they want to say, and people aren't getting the real story anymore. So, yeah, it's so on the nose. I mean, no matter what your like political beliefs and all that, they say that about the other side, no matter what. And yeah, it's a bit scary, but I do actually like the second part a lot, because it's actually Winston kind of falling in love with this girl, Julia. And they both think that, well, Julia isn't as much in on it. She doesn't care as much about Goldstein and changing things. She just kind of wants to be in love with someone.
Yeah. If I remember correctly, she's less political than Winston.
Absolutely, absolutely.
Well, she's a bit less concerned maybe than Winston, right?
But she does still join him on these like outings, and even to visit basically their boss O'Brien later on. He supposedly is there to like give them the book that Goldstein wrote, and this is something that is completely banned. You will be vaporized if you read this, or if you have this book. It's incredibly dangerous. And she joins him to like kind of revolt in a way.
Yeah, so let me ask you, I recommended this, you know, to yourself and for example to Robert, and I say, you know, this is one of the, for me, this is one of the most important books that exist. I mean,
yeah,
do you agree, or do you thought I was all right, but it's not, you know?
I would say compared to Three Musketeers, this is a much more important book. Yes.
Yeah.
Whereas I like them both, this one, it's very much a cautionary tale. Like Handmaid's Tale is one of those as well. And they happen all over. This one is especially about authoritarianism, as Dean and I have talked about before. What's very interesting, just one cool thing I've noticed or I found on the internet, was that this book has been banned for two different reasons. One is for being anti-communism in Russia, but also being banned for being pro-communism in the United States.
Yeah, because I suppose we read it and we can assume this is some kind of totalitarian communist, but they never specifically say that. And you could look at it the other way.
Totally right.
Yeah, I mean, it could be entirely fascist.
I'm funny that you mentioned Handmaid's Tale. So for me, it's Brave New World. I read that first, and then 1984 straight afterwards. And Aldous Huxley, author from Brave New World, was George Orwell's teacher, and he really criticizes, I find, pre-fascist, very capitalist society from, you know, from the very late 20s jazz era, whereas 1984 was written in 48, hence 84, switching the numbers around, or published at least in that year. And talks about just post Second World War and like the fear of, for me, it is a bit more the fear of potentially communism taking over. But I find The Handmaid's Tale is another great book to read, because that's about male dominance and also religious.
Well, it's mostly about theocracy.
Exactly.
I've not read it. I've read Huxley, but I've not read Handmaid's Tale yet.
I find they're the three ultimate dystopian books that people can read and then form their own opinion. Yeah.
I would put Fahrenheit 451 in there. That was always my big three. It was Fahrenheit 1984 and Brave New World. But
yeah, I haven't read that one, so I have to read that as well.
So you like the book, and I suppose you gave us the brief overline. Are we going to talk about part three, or are we going to just leave that to the...
So I think we can talk about it a little bit. I don't want to talk about maybe the last maybe couple pages necessarily, but... the reason that it's considered like, well, anti-communist is to scare people, sure. The reason it's considered pro-communist by some, it's more about the ending. But I don't want to get into it too much. However, Winston is betrayed by O'Brien. He was captured by what is essentially like the KGB there and tortured. And they're not exactly trying to vaporize him. They're not going to kill him, but they're trying to brainwash him into being like everyone else to fit into society normally.
That seems pretty tough to get through.
And that's the entire last third is just torture, basically.
Oh yeah, room 101. A great concept, because it's basically what's your ultimate fear, put it in a room, that's your torture.
So that is the final torture. The torture wasn't working, basically. Or he was agreeing with them, but he wasn't going to betray Julia. And Julia wasn't going to betray him until you go into room 101, where, well, yeah, they basically do betray each other.
Deepest fear, and I find that is a method used in, you know, it's used by many... by many who are against terrorism or by terrorists themselves. You know, it's used a lot, that method. So he's given some cool names. He's also given the concept of, you know, there are three superpowers. One is your ally, one is your enemy. But then you can, then the politics, the government decides from one day to the next to switch it. And then all of a sudden, it's the old idea of 2 + 2 = 5. If everyone says it, then it's true. Everyone said, no, this, but they were my enemy yesterday. I'm my friend. Oh, yes. What are you talking about? It was always that way. If everyone says it, if social media pushes you, you believe that maybe there was something deeply wrong in your head.
Yeah. That's a core principle of the book, is just changing. Yeah. You know, here are the facts today. Everyone's in agreement. And then tomorrow, just saying, well, now we've changed that. And everyone is so brainwashed, essentially, that they're just like, yeah, this has, it's always been this way, right? Like, and so tell me about Winston, because I noticed this in a lot of Orwell books. And there's usually one person who feels that the world isn't right. You know, everyone else just seems to go along with it. And in this case, it's literal, what essentially is brainwashing, mass propaganda. In other books, it's not. It's just people are living in the normal world. But there's always someone kind of thinks the world isn't right. And I don't know why, but we need to do something about it. And that's a character that I really, really empathize with it. So I like Winston.
Yeah, I mean, he doesn't feel like he's supposed to be this really important person necessarily, right? He's just a person. Yeah. He's just every man. So I can't say I felt much about him. I feel like he's that type of character that you're supposed to put yourself into his shoes.
Yeah.
Yes, I think so. He's not remarkable, but you're meant to, he's supposed to open the door for you to empathize, and as you say, you know, imagine yourself in that situation, really.
Exactly.
Totally is. So what do you think about Three Musketeers then?
Now, Three Musketeers, so Dean might be able to add a little bit about this one, since this is one of his favorite books of all time. Three Musketeers is much more relaxing, I would say.
Yes.
I didn't feel sick when reading this one.
It's a very different kind of book.
Yeah. So I can't exactly place this. It's not my favorite of Dumas. I do still prefer Count of Monte Cristo. Okay. There.
What? Dean's right.
I think because it feels a little more disjointed. So I really, really love like the first 100-150 pages when you have D'Artagnan going to the city. He's meeting the other three musketeers. So that would be Aramis, Athos, and Porthos. Mm-hmm. And they're both very, or all three of them are really interesting characters. And the way they meet, the way they just kind of, they basically meet as enemies and they end up having to go to duels against each other. And it's kind of funny just to see like, hey, I'm supposed to duel you. No, I'm supposed to duel him. There, he ends up in duels with all of them and somehow survives because other people try to attack and yeah, he kind of saves them.
One thing I love about, they duel, but they're very gentlemanly about it. You know, and if someone's injured or something, say, oh no, we're not going to duel. You've got a sore arm. You know, let's give you a week or two to recover. We'll come back here and then we'll fight to the death. You know,
that is one of my favorite scenes from it. I really, really enjoy it a lot.
Yeah.
And then after that, basically they have a secret mission that they have to take care of. And they all go to London basically to, give some information to the Duke, or well, actually, sorry, to get something from the Duke. And each one is kind of, each of the three Musketeers is left along the way to deal with a fight or something. Mm-hmm. And I can't say I was too excited about it because I was wondering, like, oh, where's this going to go? They're going to come back later in London, and London's going to be where like the climax is. No, they come back all fine, and it doesn't seem to go anywhere. It was a really big adventure for such a minor problem, just getting jewels from the Duke to give back to the Queen. And sure, it could have turned into something big. That's why I feel like it feels a little disjointed, because then you have them going to war after that, and then you have the stuff with my lady after that. So it feels like kind of four different stories. Now I can see it like in maybe four different books where you'd have like a sequel, or even like a TV show where you have this story first and then this story and then this story, where I think it could work much better. But as one whole book, it didn't entirely connect. Now each story for the most part was really, really good. So if I were to just see them on their big adventure going to London, I would have probably had more fun. But then we come back and it's like, we're just going to go to war now. All right.
Okay.
I thought we just had something giant right before that.
I suppose that's the nature of this kind of picaresque novel, where it is like, let's go do an adventure. Well, that's over suddenly. Let's go do another one. You know?
Yeah. I guess I'm more used to it being one adventure.
Yeah. I mean, I get what you mean, actually. And I think that your point is very valid.
It's like Pickwick Papers, for example, from Dickens, where he did random adventures. And when I read that, it was like very enjoyable, but you know, it's like short stories. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I guess like when you watch a show that's like anthology series, that's kind of what you get.
Yeah. And no, I should say the sequels are less like that.
Okay.
Well, the next sequel, sorry, is a bit less like that. It's more one story about the execution of Charles I. Then they go back to being like that because they get really long. Like the third book is split into three books. It's so long. So there's just a lot going on and it's all separate. So your problem returns. But
yeah, yeah. I mean, I would definitely be willing to check out some of the others. And it was a very fun book. I really, really liked, I believe it was Athos. He just had a really interesting backstory. He was secretive at first. And Dumas really knew how to give you just a little at a time. Aramis was fun. And I think, Dean, you said this was your favorite just because of how suave and...
Yeah, kind of... So I get why you like Athos best, because he is very noble. He's the kind of almost the unofficial leader in the sense that they do look up to him and respect him in a kind of way, you know?
And he gets arrested saying, D'Artagnan needs more freedom than I do right now, so I'm just going to go to jail. Like, wow, that is the noblest thing you could have done.
I like Aramis because he's, you know... I don't really like his religious story where he's trying to get into the church and things, but I like he is very suave and kind of he's well dressed and things like that. He gets all the ladies and he's very conniving. And I do go off him as the books go on because he increases that to like to the power of, you know, to an infinite degree of sort of connivingness and really gets embroiled in the religious world as well. And then Porthos is just a big, you know, giant who also likes to look good. He's a bit vain, but actually he's just you know, I'm gonna smash things guy.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought. I'm gonna smash things and I'm gonna drink and have a lot of fun.
Yeah. Do you think that D'Artagnan himself is a bit more layered than maybe the three? Like, the three of one main trait, whereas D'Artagnan is a character.
I would still say Athos is probably deeper than D'Artagnan. Oh. Because Athos, he is noble, but he's also has a past that we know a lot about. We know that he was married and he basically killed the woman that he was married to because she was sent to be executed. And I feel like that gives him a lot more depth.
Yeah,
D'Artagnan like at the beginning doesn't really have a lot of depth. So he got me a little less interested than Athos.
Whenever there's a tragedy, I find, in the backstory, it immediately makes it more dimensional, the character, right? Because, all right, you know something about the past and you can relate to what happened in between. It kind of fills in a lot of lines, I feel
Yeah, it feels like there's a lot more there to look at. Now, D'Artagnan, he didn't have so much of an interesting past. He got some money from his father. His father was a musketeer, and he liked to fight a lot. So at the beginning, it's like, all right, where's this going to go? He's a bit a naive, like in a video game, he'd be like the level one warrior who then grows up into like a level 50 by the end, right?
And I'll tell you something about D'Artagnan. The more you follow through this, he levels up to ridiculous degrees, and I'm not going to give any spoilers because the series of books, they all appear, but he's the centerpiece of the series. And we've reviewed a few of them before, but he gets to great heights and becomes Athos. He becomes this highly respected old veteran kind of guy. So that's a really good bit about him. And you get to see him develop from this young country lad, you know?
Yeah, exactly. You do see development. Cool. What was that, PJ?
No, I just said that's interesting that it's you can really see the character develop throughout different novels and into different, you told me a bit, Dean, like into very different kind of professions and social classes. So, right, because, you know, a terrible thing would be like to keep the character stuck in one place, like some authors would do. And that's just so natural, isn't it, as well? And just boring as well.
Yeah.
He definitely changes along the way. I mean, there's some things I like that he does, but then there's other things I don't like. Like he really took advantage of Kitty and... that kind of sat the wrong way with me. Mm-hmm. But I do think that the ending is absolutely fantastic. I really like how it went. It did slow down a bit. So you have my lady who's basically imprisoned by her brother-in-law.
Oh.
And...
Well, don't the ending. Oh, yeah. Are you doing
no, it's not the ending. It's not the ending. And no, this is before the ending. And okay. In this time, it really slows to a crawl. She's imprisoned for probably 50 to 75 pages. And that's not a lot necessarily, but each
compared to day the first,
they go through, each chapter feels a lot of the same. And she's kind of a one-note character.
Oh, okay.
She's conniving, and that's kind of all I really got from her.
Mm-hmm. I think that everything you've said is fair, you know, absolutely. Mm-hmm. I think so. But yeah, the reason I recommend it is just because you liked Monte Cristo, and I thought, well, same author. And this one's my favorite, but again, it's maybe because I read it first. You know, this sat on my shelf for about 6 years, and I thought, what's this old, stuffy French book? I'm not going to read that. And then one day I just thought, you know, there's nothing else available, I'll read it. And I just thought, oh yeah, this is the best thing I've ever read in my life. And I wasn't expecting this young country lad to end up meeting the king and everything like that, you know?
Is it really one of your favorite books ever?
Yeah, it definitely is. It would probably be in one of my top five of all time or something. Oh, you know, it's fantastic. Yeah.
But then Monte Cristo is your favorite book, Alex, right? So it's your number one favorite.
Yes. And so maybe that's also part of it. I might have been expecting more like Monte Cristo. And
kind of disappointed a bit, I suppose, right? After
Not exactly. I don't think I was disappointed. I certainly had problems with some areas, but I'd still say I'd grade it an A. It's still a really, really good book. There's a lot of good things to talk about.
I'll tell you one thing, because Monte Cristo is an incredibly long book. I think that, and this is much, much shorter, you know, I think that to make a fair comparison, not that I'm saying, you know, you have to go away and do this, but to make a really fair comparison, you'd want to read the sequels as well. They're a comparable length, and then you see the same level of progression that you see in
Monte Cristo. Yeah, see it as one book. Kind of.
Yeah.
Mm.
Well, anyway, look, it's good that you like them both. Very different kinds of books. Anyway, and thanks for calling in. Do you have anything else you want to say about them, or?
I do want to add one more thing. So we were talking about Brave New World and all these others similar to 1984. One I heard about, but I have not watched. It's a movie called Dunno on the Moon. It's a Russian, I believe a Russian movie, but this is more about capitalism and some of the fears about capitalism and how people are taken advantage of. So you can kind of get a range from what we've talked about, Handmaid's Tale, about theocracy and like authoritarianism in 1984. This one would be capitalism.
Indeed, one of the first dystopian proper books was the Russian novel We, which came out maybe 8 years or 9 years before Brave New World. So I'd also love to read that myself. This film also sounds good.
I'm a very vocal critic of capitalism, so this sounds good.
Yeah, thanks. That really sounds good to me too. I'd love to read it.
Yeah, I think Nikolai Nosov is his name, the one I'm who did this. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thanks. Well, sounds good. Thank you very much. And I think that is the end of the show. So thanks, everyone, for listening. We'll be back, as always, next month.
Thanks for calling, Alex, and thanks, everyone, for listening.
Thanks for having me.
Get on booksboys.com and click buttons and do things. Send us your feedback via smoke signals and carrier pigeons. And we're going to end...
Give us the feedback if you missed the grasshoppers or perhaps you missed the sheep from a few months ago. Any other requests you want? Maybe
we need more animals in the background. Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I can juggle something. I don't know. Like, just give some crazy requests.
This show felt like child's play after the difficulties we had last month. This was so easy to record. So I love that. We're going to end, I think, this month with my newest song, which actually is 3 or 4 months old now. It just took me a while to get around to it using it. So I'm going to play my latest song, which is called When the World Comes Crashing Down. And if the DJ would spin that record.
It's fitting for the dystopian theme.
And we'll be back in about a month.
See ya.
To accept you did not come, 'cause I've waited for you oh so long, but the love in your heart has now gone, and I'm still convinced you were the one. And when the world comes crashing down, I can't accept you'll no longer be around. I need your voice, I don't hear a sound. My heart is bleeding, dripping on the ground. Whoa, after you've gone. Whoa, whoa, the world is a sad song. Whoa, you were my goddess, my Aphrodite. Flame within me, you ignited. Now there's no Venus inside, and my heart burns from deep inside. Baby, baby, I want you back. You're the only one, and that's a fact. When did our bond begin to crack? Once it was over, there was no turning back. I said, whoa, after you've gone. Whoa. Whoa, the world is a sad song. Whoa. And you know that I still love you, and I dream of you every night. You know you still reside in my heart, baby. For love, I'm prepared to fight. I thought I could live
painting.
You were the one to whom I gave my
heart. I gave you my heart, yeah.
I'm so sorry that we had to part. And now we're both back at the start. I said it's whoa, after you've gone. Whoa, Whoa, I said it's whoa, after you've gone, then it's whoa, 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 the world is a sad song, whoa.
Books Boys was presented by The Dean and PJ Burke in association with Thaddeus Penguin Productions. Ah! This episode was brought to you by our sponsor,
The Anna Karenina Method.
If you would like to get in touch, you can email us at booksboys@hotmail.com or visit us at booksboys.com. The intro uses Driving in the 70s from the Of Soundtracks and Garage Bands EP by Trapdoor. And the outro uses Dog's Light by Bravo Max from the album of the same name. All music used is either Podsafe or used with permission.
If you'd like to support the show, go to patreon.com/booksboys. Get the show early and all of our bonus Boof Fan the Boys shows. And you can also check out our music on Spotify or Apple Music.
Thank you kindly for listening to us. Please tell your friends. And come back next time for another episode of Books Boys. Read some books!
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.